There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hey, great to be with you on a Monday night here on Sports Open Line. And it's crazy, you know, we just started the baseball offseason, and there's a lot of baseball to talk about today. We're going to get some Blues in next hour as well. Obviously, tough game in Anaheim. But, I mean, that stuff happens. Not the end of the world. It's a long season. I know it's, you know, when it's early, you know, in any season, all you really have are the games you've seen, and sometimes it's the most recent ones that can, you know, that are ones that affect your memory, and you're like, oh, that wasn't great. And it wasn't last night by any means. Best thing about the Blues, by the way, is that if you want to know how things are going precisely, just listen to Craig Berube, because if it's good, he's going to tell you it's good, and if it's not good enough or if it's bad, he's going to tell you it's not good enough or it's bad. So it's nice to have that kind of weather vane, right? It's really easy to follow. You don't have to have too many really ridiculous – I shouldn't say ridiculous, but outside opinions of it when the head coach is just going to tell you the deal and be blatantly honest about it. So we'll get to some Blues. I don't think anything is, you know, last night could have been better, but I mean, I'm not going to take any one game more than any others. But there are some things to talk about, some issues with, you know, the COVID list and whether or not the NHL, as the Blues are asking, whether or not the NHL should be helping teams out when it comes to the salary cap and managing COVID, because, you know, the Blues are in a spot where they had to make a move last week to bring up a defenseman, Callie Rosen, and not their top prospect, Scott Perunovic, because the contracts of the two, you know, are different. So it meant that because of for cap purposes, you couldn't bring Perunovic up to step in. And I know that, you know, every, you know, the cap, you know, when you're near the cap, you should be, it should be a hard cap. It should be difficult to manage. But I also think that leagues can be a little smarter when it comes to things like COVID. Well, you know, when you've got strict guidelines in place and there are things that, you know, we're seeing pop up all over professional sports right now, I'd say that, you know, might be not be a bad idea for the NHL to revisit the hardcore nature of their interpretation of all that. But we'll get to that next hour. We have a ton of baseball today, as you would imagine. A lot of Cardinals news. Five Gold Glove winners announced last night. I mean, that's insane, man. I want to get into, you know, all of the, you know, the individuals and about, you know, what they mean to the team and all that. We'll do that as we go through the show. But that is stunning. And that's a combination of things. You know, I mean, it's a combination of identifying guys that are great defenders and then playing them every day. I mean, and it's not hard to do that when it's Nolan Arenado. It's not hard to do that when it's Paul Goldschmidt, when they're, you know, Hall of Fame caliber hitters, or at least potential Hall of Fame caliber hitters, guys that are building those types of careers where if they stick around long enough, you might have that conversation, you know, 5-6 years more down the road. But it's also finding guys like Tommy Edman, identifying them, developing them, understanding what they are, and then making the decision, the comfortable decision, to move on from Colton Wong to save money coming out of a pandemic, knowing you've got a guy stepping in behind him that's a pretty damn good player. And that's really good stuff. I mean, that's not, you know, well, we got this first-round pick, which is what Wong was, who's going to slide in there someday. And this is a guy, no. This guy has been he's a developmental player. We liked him out of college. But this dude is, you know, we know we can count on this guy at the very least for excellent defense, and we'll see where it goes from there. But so you've got that element. You know, they had to stick with it on Tyler O'Neill and Harrison Bader, and they get rewarded not only with the Gold Gloves, but also with the offense that both of them brought to the table this year. So we got to talk about the five Gold Glove winners. We are going to talk about Yadi not getting his 10th Gold Glove. And I've had some people message me on Twitter, and it's, you know, telling me he got robbed. I don't think he did. I mean, don't get me wrong, he would have been perfectly deserving choice as a Gold Glove winner this year. But, man, when you look at some of the numbers that Jacob Stallings racked up, I mean, he had double the defensive run saved to the next closest catcher in Major League Baseball. That's pretty good. That's, in fact, that's more than pretty good. That's dominant We'll talk about that, though, later on. And I don't think it hurts Yachty in any way, big picture. I wrote a piece about that for KMOX.com today. We'll get into some of that. We'll talk about the return of TJ McFarland, whether or not Luis Garcia may also be back here in the not-too-distant future. And, of course, we'll talk about the offseason already underway and some moving and shaking and people talking about free agents. We'll do all of that stuff, starting with our next guest. Keith Costas from MLB Network will join me when we come back on KMOX. Monday night on Sports Open Line here on KMOX. The baseball offseason just underway, and man, there's already a lot of stuff to talk about, which is why we reached out to our friend Keith Costas from MLB Network, who's kind enough to join us yet again. First of all, thanks for putting up with me, Keith. I thank you for doing that. Secondly, how you doing, man? Everything going all right?
Yeah, first Monday with no baseball on the schedule, so I appreciate you letting me pretend like we've got plenty to talk about like we did during the season on this first Monday of the offseason. Yeah, plenty on the table, like you said, so let's get into it.
Yeah, it's not as much, but yeah, there's still more than I kind of anticipated, although we knew, for example, that the Gold Gloves would be handed out last night. What we didn't know is that the same team, the Cardinals, would have five winners in the National League. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, pretty unbelievable. And, I mean, obviously Yachty was not in that mix, too. Jacob Stallings was one of the best defenders in the league, so no qualms there from my perspective with Stallings bringing it home. But when you can throw Yachty Molina into the mix with five Gold Glovers, I think that you got a pretty good defense working there. And even the guys they had at shortstop that obviously had a split there, so didn't get into the mix. But pretty solid defense at all positions, even the guys that weren't finalists and eventually winners. So, yeah, certainly an impressive feat for the Birds.
Let's start with the catching one, because I understand it. Cardinals fans are dedicated. Yachty is the most popular Cardinal. He and Waino, I guess, split that right down the middle. There were some people that were a little annoyed, and I think some of it has to do, Keith, with the fact that people don't watch the Pirates, and because Jacob Stallings is not a star player. He's not a guy that came up with a big reputation. He's really a guy that's kind of come out, I wouldn't say come out of nowhere, but certainly is a late bloomer, you know, right around 30 years old, who in the last couple of years has emerged as one of the better defenders. I'm with you. I just don't see an argument there. If Yachty had won it, I wouldn't see an argument against him either. But, I mean, Stallings, his defensive run saves were twice the next closest catcher in all of baseball. That's nuts.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous. He was tied with Correa for the most in the majors. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here with your catching background, but I think people just have a hard time wrapping their heads around all of the metrics and all that goes into catching when you're not watching a guy on an everyday basis, which is totally understandable. I mean, even as someone who follows it on a national level day in and day out, I definitely feel like as a Cardinals fan, I have a much better handle on Yadier Molina's defense than Jacob Stallings. But when you look at some of these numbers, even if you mix in, you know, whatever margin for error there is with this inexact science and kind of quantifying catcher defense, when you see those pitch framing numbers for a guy and they're, like you mentioned, just so far and away out in front of the league with as much. I mean, you look at what the Tigers did this week with Tucker Barnhart. Teams value that stuff. They look at these catchers that can steal strikes, and it's a big, big deal. So when you've got a guy like Stallings, you know, like I said, even working a little margin for error and there's that big of a gap, you know there's got to be something there. And it's not exactly like he's working with a staff that has pinpoint command there either. So you got to give him even more credit given what he's working with in terms of who's throwing those balls that he's framing.
Good point. And I'll say this. Here's where he wins my admiration as a catching nerd. He did not have a single pass ball. He caught 892 innings in the major leagues, and he did not have a single pass ball. That's almost impossible. That's almost impossible.
Yeah, I was not aware of that. That is extremely, extremely impressive. And not to knock Yachty, but I think that that's probably one area where, for as great as he still is controlling the running game and obviously working with the staff, which we'll never really be able to quantify,
right,
and is his greatest value, in my opinion. But, you know, I think that's an area where we've seen Yachty maybe slip a little bit, where it's not all that out of the ordinary for him to occasionally let one get by and get back to the backstop. Not that he's doing it at a rate that's alarming or anything. Like you said, did. But, man, no pass balls. Yeah, I'm with you. That is impressive. And you might see that on MLB Network at some point this week, with credit to you.
You know, I'll tell you, and just continuing the catching conversation, because I love to do that, I think, you know, all of this stuff that you've referenced, and I think, you know, like for now we're talking about, you know, Stallings had the year this year. But, I mean, all of these things are the things that favor Yachty over the course of 18 years, right? I mean, the fact that he's 39 and a Gold Glove finalist is telling the story of the greatness of this player. And, you know, he may not get that 10th Gold Glove. I don't know. That'd be great. But I don't think it changes how he's viewed in the long term. I mean, I think people have come around, even some of the people that have not been so sure about the Molina, the Hall of Fame. I think a lot of people have come around on that here in the last couple of years because he hasn't really shown that much decline. I mean, he's still, again, a Gold Glove finalist at the position at 39 years old. And I think it's great that, you know, we've seen his career, and then we see, like, Buster Posey calling it a career. And I don't know why people need to fight over the two of them, but I think they're both, right, you know, the greats of their time, and I think they both are going to be Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You've got Posey with an unbelievable peak in terms of both individual performance and obviously what he meant to the team with those three titles.
Right.
And then you've got Yadi, who, to me, I think I've probably mentioned this to you before, if we've talked Yadi, because it's my favorite kind of go-to with him. You know, you look at the catchers that were the peak, kind of high peak catchers of his generation, and Joe Mauer and Buster Posey, and Yadi is going to end up catching more games than those two combined. You know, both from the shorter careers and the time that both of those guys, played at first base. So that's not a knock on Joe Mauer or Buster Posey. I think they're both Hall of Famers in my mind, but, you know, there's different ways to skin a cat, and Yadier Molina doing it from a defensive perspective with that type of insane volume, I don't really know what much more there is to debate. And then if you want to get into the advanced numbers, you look at kind of some of the adjustments that Fangraphs made in recent years to try to quantify some of that catcher defense, and you see a big bump. And then, you know, you bring up Posey. Even this week, you see some of the leading kind of sabermetricians around the game and on baseball Twitter, you know, guys like Tom Tango, who's been involved in various projects over the years and has a heavy hand in StatCast. Now, even him saying that even with those kind of new age catcher numbers that have readjusted the war, he'd still go ahead and just add 10 to all these war numbers for the catchers. So, yeah, you talk about the volume and that type of consistency with Yadi, and he's a no doubt Hall of Famer to me, and there's plenty of room for the Buster Poseys and Joe Mauer's in there too.
100%. And, you know, I know it's only one part of the game, and it's a diminished part of the game in the modern era, the stolen base, but when you've got the fewest stolen bases attempted against your team since the day that you took over as the starting catcher, you've done something, right? I mean, and it's not only the fewest, it's like 50% fewer than the next closest team over a 16-17 year run, man. That's, again, I don't know why, but it feels like a lot of these facts today are just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I haven't checked it in the last, 12 to 18 months, but I know for a long time there was a stat with Yadi, with what you're alluding to. Yeah. If he had not ever thrown out a single runner, just based on the infrequency of attempts, I think since he's come up, there's only one or two teams maybe that has allowed fewer stolen bases than have even been attempted against the Cardinals. So that tells you all I need to know about shutting down the running game with Yadi.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's work to the other Gold Glovers for just a second, Keith. I mean, no big surprise at all in Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, this is his fourth, so we know he's done this before. Nolan Arenado, 9 in a row, no surprise. I don't think it's that big a surprise that either Bader or O'Neill won. But I think Tommy Edman was a little surprised to me, and not because it didn't work or it didn't make sense, but normally you kind of have to overcome you almost have to knock out the champ to get there, right? And Colton Wong was still pretty good this year, still, in fact, you know, at the top of the league this year in a lot of defensive metrics. That's the part that surprises me, is that not that Edman was good enough, but that he actually had the sway to get it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you have to consider also, if you're just, you know, with the way these awards are voted on now and people not watching the teams every day necessarily and voting more based off numbers, you have to remember that Edman moved around a little bit too. So I know he had, you know, if not the most, close to the most plate appearances in the National League. He was a true everyday guy, whereas Colton, you know, missed some time. But their numbers in terms of innings played and the defensive runs saved and everything at the position weren't all that far off. So Edman was, you know, if you watch the Cardinals every day, he was obviously very good. But I was surprised, I'm with you, that he was able to knock off the incumbent. And there were other good candidates, not even the finalists. It was a pretty deep position defensively, second base in the National League this year. So, pleasant surprise for Edman to move into that category as the winning Gold Glover at second base. And I guess the Cardinals are fairly vindicated in their decision to move on from Wong, as frustrating as it was for a lot of fans at the time. Tommy Edman certainly acquitted himself well in that first season as the everyday guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the offense still needs to improve, especially the on-base side of it. But, you know, aside from the on-base side of it, I mean, if he could just walk some more, he would be exactly what you're looking for, because he steals bags, he hits the balls into gaps, he's a great defender. What's going to be interesting as we go forward from this, Keith, and I tried to sum this up in a blog for KMOX.com today, but I really think that the Gold Glove awards are symbolic, but it's a meaningful symbolism because this is kind of your cornerstone, right? Moving into 2022, you know you're going to have this elite defense again. I mean, all of these guys are back. No, but none of these people are leaving or going anywhere. I guess guys could get hurt, but we're not going to worry about that for now. So what I think went wrong in 2021 more than the offense going wrong, Keith, because in the end, turned out the offense, especially if you look at road numbers, wasn't all that bad. It was just bad at Busch Stadium, which obviously has been a problem for a number of years now. But I think the biggest problem, the thing that went wrong, was the pitching not being what it was expected to be, because this team counts on that. They don't always count on being an elite offense, but they count on having great pitching and they count on having great defense.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it'll be very interesting to see if they can kill two birds with one stone in terms of their pitching approach in this offseason. You know, they'll need to replace some innings in that rotation. But like you said, knowing that they have this defense in place, and I do think that, you know, that's an attractive thing. Like, obviously, these players' agents have access to all the information. They don't need an award from Rawlings to know which team is good defensively. But if you're a free agent pitcher and you're looking at a team with a set roster that has five Gold Glovers on it and you're throwing to a guy in Yadier Molina, that has to carry a lot of weight. Now, obviously, I think we overthink and overanalyze all of these things. At the end of the day, it's almost always going to be about the money. But if a competitive offer is there and there's a fit there, I think this is going to be a team that a lot of pitchers, especially the ones that fit the profile, you know, a Marcus Stroman type or any kind of other, you know, further down the list, diamond in the rough that the Cardinals feel like can keep the ball on the ground, it's going to be a place that's pretty attractive to pitch. So it's pretty intriguing, the possibilities that are in front of them to kind of remake, not even remake, but just reinforce this staff with the defense that you mentioned, because I think a lot of guys are going to line up to want to pitch in front of it.
You know, that pitching depth, Keith, seems to be. I think they need another bat at some point just to thicken up the middle of the order. And if you do that, ideally, I'd love a lefty. I'm sure you probably agree. And, you know, the guy that we'd all dream for is Seager, but I don't think we're going to see a $300 million shortstop with the third baseman and first baseman you currently have under contract. But, I mean, a left-handed bat to me is bigger than whatever position the person plays, especially with the DH likely coming in. So, do you agree with that? And then, B, when you look at the starting pitching side, you know, you have four guys that are already going to be locked in if they're not hurt, with Wainwright and Flaherty and Hudson and Michaelis. And then, of course, you had other guys like they really want to see what Alex Reyes can do and other than that. But I'd still love to see another veteran known commodity starter in there. And then you can do what Tampa and L.A. do so well. And you can use six or seven or eight guys over the course of the year because you know you're going to need it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even if you're going with that approach and you have the depth in the bullpen and kind of those swing arms to pull it off, you said it. Look at the Dodgers. I would run it back with that same kind of approach that they had again if I was them and like my chances to see where the chips might fall. But look how it played out this year. By the end of the year, they were battered. You know,
yeah.
May was injured throughout the year. Gonsolin was injured. Obviously, we saw what happened with Urias and Scherzer, and that's a whole other conversation in terms of what the particular usage patterns might have done to them down the stretch. But yeah, if the Los Angeles Dodgers, who've proven that you can win a lot of games taking that approach, have laid the blueprint for how you go about that, they've also shown us the pitfalls of not having enough depth or what can happen when you even think you have enough depth. So yeah, certainly, even as the game has changed and the way you deploy these pitchers has certainly changed in the last 4 or 5 years in particular, the old adage that you can't have enough pitching is still going to be true regardless of what roles they're deployed in. So yeah, they're going to need more guys than you start the season with in the rotation. And I'm with you. I think it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do with their young versions of those Gonsolin and May types when we see the Thompsons and when we see the Liberators and what kind of usage they're getting. Because if the Cardinals feel like they have, you know, guys that they can be aggressive with in the bullpen, if they get back to what they said they wanted to do with the Alex Reyes of the world and use them as multi-inning relievers and get up around 100 innings. Now, I know he could be in the rotation next year, but just for the purposes of this conversation, if they have those guys that can kind of fill various roles and take on bulk innings and not necessarily a traditional starter's role, then I think you can be, you know, you might have a really interesting situation on your hands with what kind of value the Cardinals can get from those kind of 6th through 10th starters on the staff where they're not backup starters, they're just valuable guys.
So we're, 100%. Keith Costas with us from MLB Network. And, well, on MLB Network right now, they're announcing the finalists for all of the BBWAA award winners. And no big surprise, Dylan Carlson, one of the three finalists for National League Rookie of the Year. He, Jonathan India, and Trevor Rogers are the two finalists. I would think that India is probably the heavy favorite there from the numbers he put up for the Reds. But still cool to see Carlson as one of those three finalists. And how about this? Just came down about 10 minutes ago. Your finalists for National League Manager of the Year are Craig Counsell, Gabe Kapler, and Mike Schilt.
Perfect.
Funny how that
beautiful.
Works.
Perfect.
I think Gabe Kapler is going to win that, though, right?
Yeah, Kapler, I think, has to be a runaway winner there. And in the American League side, you know, the Manager of the Year is always such a crapshoot. How do we really vote on this stuff? But, you know, when you've got Gabe Kapler and Scott Servais in the mix, just complete overachievers, I think it's a pretty safe bet that those two are going to bring home the trophy, because that's basically how people vote on it. It's not how good of a job you did.
Right.
It's how bad of a job did we think you were going to do relative to how good of a job you actually did. So I think we can pencil those two in for the Managers of the Year.
That's a great point. That's a great point. All right, last thing we can close on here, Keith, and that is just, you know, this month. It's going to be interesting. I know there have been a couple of things already. You know, sounds like Andrew Haney's got a place to land with the Dodgers. The Cardinals have kept T.J. McFarland. It sounds like we're going to have some, like, smaller size moves here in the coming weeks, but it sounds like we're also going to have to wait probably until we figure out all this labor stuff before the big guys get moving.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all way above my pay grade, and I think you're right that we're going to have to wait for some of this stuff to get sorted out on the labor side before we really get what a traditional off-season usually looks like. But you're right. There has been some stuff so far. You know, the qualifying offers, both guys that did and didn't get it, was pretty interesting to me. I thought that there was a handful of guys that were candidates to accept it, which has been a rarity, but I saw just before I hopped on with you that Michael Conforto, who was a guy that I had circled as maybe someone who'd want to reestablish his value, that he's going to go ahead and decline the offer. So, you know, the Clayton Kershaws of the world, there were some guys that are some big-name guys that did not get the offer that won't have that draft pick compensation attached to them. So I think these next, it'll probably come down mostly tonight. The news will break in terms of all of the qualifying offer stuff, but that's always kind of the first checkpoint in the offseason to gauge where the market's going to go, because it's played such a huge role in recent seasons, just teams hesitant to give up any kind of compensation in terms of the draft pick. And obviously that's something that might be addressed in these upcoming CBA talks. So kind of the last go round potentially to analyze these early days of the offseason through the prism that we have over the last 10 or 12 years with this qualifying offer system.
Keith, you're the best, buddy. Thank you for doing this. Enjoy whatever nice baseball we have for the next few weeks, and hopefully the other stuff gets settled before too much longer. But we appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll find some KBO at some point. We'll get through it together.
Thank you, Keith. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
See you, Kevin.
There you go. Keith Costas from MLB Network. All right, we're going to pick up on a bunch of those topics here as we go through the night tonight, including what it means when a guy like Conforto turns down the qualifying offer, even coming off a bad year. And we'll talk more about what this means, for, you know, what the Cardinals awards mean for the team and all of that. We're going to talk more about catching. I want to do that for a quick second next up here on KMOX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gutter.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, back in on KMOX. Obviously, a lot of baseball tonight. We'll get to some hockey next hour as well. We're going to hear a little bit from Harrison Bader later on, too. Mike Claiborne spoke with Harrison Bader earlier today. And we'll have you have a hear a little bit of that coming up in the next hour as well. So we got plenty of baseball, a mix of some hockey for sure, and then maybe some football. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure on that. Obviously, this is, you know, the beginning of award season in Major League Baseball. I mentioned the Baseball Writers Association of America awards finalists are being announced as we speak. I mentioned Mike Schilt is a finalist for National League Manager of the Year. Dylan Carlson, one of the three finalists for National League Rookie of the Year. And all of those others are being announced today, the finalists anyway. Hank Aaron Award is tomorrow. You'll get the Silver Sluggers later this week. I believe that'll be that's Thursday. You got the Reliever of the Year awards on Wednesday. Like, just every day now for the next couple of weeks, there will be some award coming on, you know, like some award being given out, or like today, finalists being announced. It's kind of that time of year in Major League Baseball. Really quickly, I wanted to follow up. You know, I know Keith Costas and I touched on the catching thing, and and, you know, Yadi not winning the Gold Glove. And I understand, you know, Cardinals fans are Yadi fans, and, I mean, so am I. I mean, it's been a privilege to watch a catcher this good for this long, for this many years. I mean, I've been here since 2006, and, you know, so I didn't see his early years on a regular basis. I mean, saw on TV, but, you know, not at the ballpark every day like I've gotten to for the last 15 years. And, you know, the guy's an all-timer. He's going to go down in history as one of the best defensive catchers in the history of the sport. The only people that have a really hardcore case to be argued with him on that would be Pudge Rodriguez and Johnny Bench. So, you know, if you're in that group, right, like you're one of the three finalists in that argument. And I know it's impossible to measure that, you know, the entirety of what a defensive catcher does. And that's, to me, kind of the point. And that's what I really thought Keith Costas made a good point on, too, is that even the people that are trying to improve people's analytical understanding of the position, it's still not enough. It just isn't enough. You cannot, and that's the problem with the position, and it's the problem with people who want to make an argument basically for the guys that played the position of catcher but were better hitters. Like, that's all that matters for the Hall of Fame. Like, well, look at Yadi's numbers. Now, I mean, we'll put it into the context of a catcher, though. You know, a catcher is normally 10 to 12% below major league average offensively. Well, Yadi is only 3% below average offensively over 18 years. So he is significantly better than the average hitting catcher. And again, this is why I just don't think people understand what they're talking about with this position as well as they need to. And by that, I mean some people that have votes too. But I also think just general sports fans don't understand the position well enough. The physical demands of it, the mental demands of it, the fact that it's every pitch of every game that you're in there. You know, you've got to know every one of your pitchers and what they do. And it's not the same thing as being a shortstop. Because you're, you know, in all the other positions, it's entirely a reactionary job. You see the ball, you go get it. Whereas the catcher, you've got to figure out the plan of attack. And it's got to be based on your meetings, based on film study, based on what you're seeing in real time. And sometimes that changes what you're going to do. You might have a plan in place based on what you'd seen previously, but that hitter could be doing something new. He could be doing something different. He could be taking a new approach, and the catcher's the one that's got to assign that, you know, kind of assign value to that, and then adjust on the fly. And this is all, I mean, I could go, honest to God, and I'm not going to do this, I could spend an entire hour on the radio going through every single thing that a catcher has to do, that they have to go through, that they have to understand, that they have to execute and deal with, and still not get to it all in an hour of just talking about it. There is so much that goes into it with, you know, controlling the running game. That and the physical toll. I mean, keeping the ball in the dirt in front of you, you know. I mean, like, the just, it's, there's no end to how much that matters. And, you know, ultimately, anybody that plays the position will obviously tell you, yeah, that's what the job's all about, and it's been an undervalued thing for a long time. And it's part of the reason why, because there's so much to it and it's impossible to put a number on, and everybody likes numbers. And don't get me wrong, there are some good defensive numbers for catchers, right? I mean, caught stealing rate is a big thing. You know, limiting the number of stolen base attempts is actually the bigger one, because nobody can steal if they don't go. Even when you're running against the best, and Yadi's been one of the best. One of the best is going to be, you know, 40%, you know, success rate of throwing runners out. That still means they're safe 60% of the time. But when they don't run, they're never safe. There's no stolen base. So, like, deterring the running game is more important than, well, I'd say at least as important as, you know, what your actual, you know, caught stealing percentage. Although that obviously leads to the second of them, right? But, you know, being the deterrent is a huge part of that. And you can't even account for how much that helps a pitcher psychologically, that he doesn't have to speed himself up, that he doesn't have to throw fastball, 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 because there's a guy on base. Like, the impact at that position when someone's as great as Molina is immeasurable. It's more than just a coach or a manager on the field. It's even more than that. And, you know, that's why Yadi doesn't have to worry about it, like, big picture. I do think that more people are starting to understand those things. More people that cover the game and that have Hall of Fame votes are more willing to accept this as reality. And that's why he's not going to have a problem. Where maybe in a previous era, he might have had a problem because he doesn't have the big, sexy offensive numbers that everybody wants out of a Hall of Famer. And I'm not sure why the Hall of Fame became the Hall of Hitting. But at some point along the way, it did. Now, there are exceptions, but there aren't that many exceptions to the rule. But with this particular position, there should be an exception, and there should be more exceptions in the future. There are a lot of catchers that are not in the Hall that should be, and a lot of it's because of that defense. But they didn't have pretty numbers, so we didn't know enough to vote for them 25 years ago. Well, now we do, and we should correct some of those problems. All right, let's talk a little bit more about pitching. Ollie Marmol talked a bit about, you know, the creativity, the potential for moving the lineup pieces around on a regular basis. And I wonder how much creativity the Cardinals will consider with their starting rotation options for next year. And, you know, those options may include a free agent as well. Let's get into that next up here on KMOX. All right, back in on Sports Open Line. Just a little bit more time here in the 6 o'clock hour, 7 o'clock hour. We're going to jump around. Got some more baseball. Let you hear a little bit of Mike Claiborne's conversation with Harrison Bader. Obviously about Harrison winning the Gold Glove in the National League for center fielders. We'll get to that next hour. We'll get some hockey into at some point, you know, once we move through the baseball stuff. And that's kind of the game plan that we're going to follow for now. First up, though, I wanted to get to that question about the rotation. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish my thoughts on that in this segment, but if I can't, we'll just pick it up after the top of the hour. But, you know, brought it up with Keith Kostas that, you know, they've got four starters already. And I know, we all know that the team really wants Alex Reyes to become a starting pitcher at some point. He's got all the weapons and all of that stuff. You know, and maybe working in that more kind of structured environment helps with the command issues that plagued him at the back end of the games in pens. Who knows? But the point is that that doesn't necessarily, you know, the idea that you want to see that and have that as a possibility for 2022 doesn't mean you can't have another established starting pitcher and go into spring training with five spots spoken for, but still have the ability to work other people in there to build up. Because keep in mind, you know, Reyes threw 70-ish innings this year. He's not going to go make 30 starts. I mean, it would be really hard to envision, you know, going in, winning a rotation spot in spring training and then starting every, you know, making his turn through the rotation every time through the rest of the year. And that's damn near impossible to think that's going to happen when you look at, again, just workload-related issues. But we also know that, you know, almost every team is going to deal with guys that are going to miss starts. And this team's no different. I mean, you know, the guys that you have are all really good. But, again, Waino's 40. Flaherty had some physical problems this year that can cause concern for next year. Same thing for Miles. Same thing for Dakota Hudson, who's going to be in his first full year after Tommy John. So I think there are enough question marks there that even if you were to go get a really solid starter, you know, I've had people asking about Marcus Stroman. Yeah, that'd be great. He might be a bit on the expensive side, but he's still the kind of guy that fits, right? I mean, he's a ground ball guy coming into a great defensive team. I mean, there are a lot, but it could be somebody like Stroman. It could be somebody like Scherzer. It could also be a solid number three, you know, a guy that is not necessarily top of the rotation, but fit somewhere in the three or the four spot that gives you five known commodities at least going into spring training. And when you think about the way that teams use their rotations in the modern baseball world, there's a lot of room to get creative with, you know, the occasional six-man rotation when you have a bunch of days straight with games, right? You're going to have like 22 straight days with games. There's an opportunity to mix in a sixth starter a couple of times to give everybody else that little bit more of a break. You know, you'll have some guys that are going to get hurt. You know this. It's going to happen. So there's going to be opportunities to get innings for more than just five starters. You're probably going to need six, seven, eight starters for a season as the season goes along. So to me, I don't think that bringing in another starter in any way takes away the possibility of Alex Reyes starting this year and building towards being more of a full-time starter down the road, if that's the way it ends up going. I mean, who knows what spring training will show. But if spring training shows that those control problems are as big a problem as a starter, well, I mean, then you don't have to force it. I think that, you know, we found out this year that not having enough starters was really, to me, the biggest problem in the end. We can talk all we want about the offense. The offense ended up being middle of the pack. The offense wound up being way better than that when it was on the road. What hurt the team the most was that the pitching staff didn't meet expectations. Because this team has great defense, and they built on pitching and defense, and they got to make sure that that pitching is top level in 2022. And if they do, I think they win the division. More baseball next here on KMOX.